Hello and welcome to another episode of the Autoblog Podcast. I'm Greg Migliori. Joining me today on this sunny August afternoon in the studio is road test editor Reese Counts. What's up, Reese?
Well, I got some new sponges in the mail today.
I don't even know what to do with that. I just stepped out of a meeting and yeah, there's a pile of sponges on your desk.
Yeah, you get these random packages every once in a while and, people send you stuff to try to review. I can't say I'm going to review a set of sponges, but, you know, it's an interesting Thursday.
But we'll use the sponges.
We will use the sponges.
On the phones from Columbus, Ohio, where Big Ten football is about to kick off in 3 weeks, Jeremy Korsnewski, consumer editor. Do you have any sponges?
I have no sponges. I didn't get any delivered today. I feel totally left out.
Sorry, okay. Jeremy.
Sorry, Jeremy. What's the weirdest thing a PR person has sent you, Jeremy?
Sent me? So I was just recently in Nashville for the Audi Q3 drive. And apparently some journalists were upset because they wanted to buy honey, local. So Audi got honey for everyone and sent it to everyone who was on the trip, in like a little itty bitty take home container. So I just got some honey.
Honda gave me some maple syrup one time on the Accord drive. I think I left it in my hotel room because I didn't want to risk it like shattering and like getting maple syrup all over my, luggage.
Yeah. That's a really, like, the risk reward there is pretty high. Yeah. Honey would be good. Honey toast. Hey, it's a children's book, I think, or a children's song. But yeah, I mean, if you destroy your entire wardrobe, that's not good.
Right.
So let's get into the cars we're driving this week. We've had a great fleet, so we're going to talk about all the things we've been reviewing, including the Subaru Forester, the Volkswagen Golf R, the BMW M340i, and the Ram Power Wagon. Lastly, we will spend your money. Lots of good stuff to talk about this week. Let's jump in with the Forester. This is a really critical car for Subaru. We're also, you know, very intrigued by what the Forester is, what it means. Jeremy, you spent a good deal of time in it down in your local fleet, if you will. Some initial impressions.
Yeah, you know, it's parked out front right now. I've got it through the weekend, but I got it all last weekend, and I took it on a pretty long drive, a couple hundred miles. Initial impressions, it's a crowd pleaser. I took my wife in it, a couple friends, and everybody who got in commented, wow, this thing's really nice for a Subaru. So I don't know if Subaru would be happy to hear the for a Subaru appended on the end, but I think that means it punches above its weight, and it is better than expected. So that's good. The one I've got is a really cool shade of, it's like a dark blue. It's got black highlights instead of chrome and really neat like orange highlights just randomly scattered all over. So it's a really good looking vehicle. It's a Subaru Forester Sport. That's cool, but there's nothing sporty about it. It doesn't have a sporty ride, doesn't have a sporty steering, doesn't have sporty anything. It's basically just a regular Forester with kind of like an exterior package that makes it look a little sporty. So the best thing I can say is it gets killer gas mileage. I drove it for a couple hundred miles with four people in it, air conditioning running the entire time. And I still got 32 miles per gallon, round trip out of a tank. I was not expecting that. Obviously, it's all-wheel drive, like all, basically all Subarus are. That usually cuts down mileage. The air conditioning, like I said, was running constantly because it was like in the high 80s the entire time. Never shut it off. Also, wasn't driving to maximize fuel efficiency. I was just driving like I normally do. So that was great. 32 miles per gallon. Roomy. I like that. There's a lot going on in the interior. Some funky textures. Obviously they're doing like, they're trying to stand out, do different things. There's lots of like honeycomb in there, both like in the plastics and in the, cloth interior. But overall I think it works. It looks pretty cool. And it's comfortable. So good car. Like it. I see why they sell a lot of them.
So we asked this last week on the podcast because John had just gotten back from the Outback launch, a vehicle we also pay a lot of attention to. Are you a Forester or an Outback guy, Jeremy?
I am an Outback guy. You get all the benefits of having the wagon, the extra cargo space, without the drawbacks of worse efficiency. Though I am, you know, I gotta clearly admit that I got great fuel efficiency out of the Forester, but I bet I'd get even better out of the Outback. And it just kind of suits the wagon shape suits my sensibilities a little bit more than the crossover shape.
Reese, how about yourself?
I'm with Jeremy, though for slightly different reasons. I like the extra space, but the Outback has always been the more powerful vehicle. You could get the flat six until recently. The new one's got what, turbo flat four? I don't think, yeah. I think the flat six is gone, which is disappointing, but you know, it's the fast.
Is that the same, turbo flat four that they're putting in the, Ascent, the seven passenger?
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Which is not, I don't love that engine, but I don't know. It's faster. And like Jeremy, I like the wagon shape.
Yeah, I'm with you. I said this last week, but I'll say it again. I'm an Outback guy. I think it's a little bit more fun to drive. I feel like it has a little bit more of a soul than the Forester. And I'm really excited about the new one. I do like the Forester, though. Like, I could easily, like, drive that and be happy.
So, I guess we could probably tease it now. We're getting a long-term Forester.
Good point. Long-term Forester. Any ideas when that's going to arrive?
I'm expecting it to be here in the next few weeks. So I'm excited. You know, like we all just said, we kind of agree that we're Outback guys, but hell, a year with a Forester could really turn me around. Yeah, I'm pretty excited about this thing.
Long time ago when I was at Auto Week, we had the Forester for a year and then we had the Outback. It replaced it. So, I mean, maybe we work a similar setup. Who knows?
Yeah. And Jeremy is driving a Forester Sport. I believe we're getting a Forester Limited, whatever the top trim was. We considered the Sport, but I think we want to test some of the other features. And, you know, I don't think most people are going to go for the Sport model. So, yeah, I'm excited. I'm glad to hear Jeremy likes it. And I really
enjoyed it. Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. I think of the Outback as like the quintessential Subaru. You know, people who are, I think, drawn to the Subaru brand and everything that it represents are probably drawn first and foremost to the Outback. And I think probably the Crosstrek too, which is kind of like the crossoverized version of the Impreza without actually being a crossover. But, you know, everybody loves crossovers. They're still like crazy here in the United States. They are the de facto family car. So, yeah, I think it'll be awesome having a Forester for a year.
Yeah, I think we're going to get a lot of use out of it. I think it's going to arrive just in time for like football, tailgating, things like that. So yeah, looking forward to it. I think, side note, tailgating. Jeremy, I always refer to you being from Columbus. Where do your football allegiances lie, actually? Is it Ohio State?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if you're going to live in Ohio and you're going to be a college football fan, you're best off rooting for the Buckeyes. You know, growing up in Toledo, it's like split right down the middle between U of M, Michigan, and Ohio State. It's actually closer to Michigan, the university. But, you know, obviously you're living in Ohio. So my wife is a Michigan fan. I'm an Ohio State fan. So at least one day out of every year, we have a really interesting day.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah, my wife went to U of M, and I also went to Michigan State. So a lot of Big Ten stuff going on here. Reese, you're a bit south of that.
Yeah, I'm an Auburn grad, so I go for Auburn unless they're playing Bama, because I also went to Bama, and
not too many people have done that.
I get a lot of trouble. So Bama and Auburn are my teams. I will say I didn't grow up in the South, so I can root for both and not feel bad about it. But yeah, I usually go for the SEC teams. It's been a weird few years, but I think we've got a good season.
Yeah.
You guys can't see it, but Jeremy is laughing on the other end of the video.
Well, an SEC guy living in Big Ten country.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the interesting thing about that, though, is this is like the one place you could get away with being both an Alabama and an Auburn fan.
Right.
Because, like, you know, that'd be like saying you're a Michigan and Ohio State and Michigan State and Notre Dame fan here. You couldn't do that. But move, what, 1,500 miles away and sure, cheer for everybody in the SEC. Nobody cares up here.
Right.
Speaking of tailgates, we're going to have a Ranger. We'll tease this one out too. That is joining our like semi-long-term fleet for about maybe 6 weeks or so, coming up on Friday. Super psyched about that. That'll be awesome for tailgates because it literally has a tailgate, of course, but pickups are really good for that sort of thing.
Yeah, I'm excited. The Ranger won our comparison test in the spring. We liked it so much, we asked Ford if we could keep one for a little longer than we usually do. I think 6 weeks is about what we've got it, give or take a little. And it'll be fun. I mean, it's always good to have a pickup truck around. I think we all really like this one. So can't say much more about it now because it's not actually here. But yeah.
I can say this. I plan on taking it to, in the football theme here, the Michigan State-Arizona State game. It's Arizona or Arizona State. It's coming to Lansing sometime in September. So I think that would be a good tailgate vehicle.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's talk about a Volkswagen Golf R. Not quite as good for football tailgating, but we had a lot of fun with it. Magma orange exterior was the color. One of our coworkers here in the office who lives in my neighborhood saw me and was like, I knew that had to be Greg because nobody's like blasting through the subdivisions of Metro Detroit in a bright orange Volkswagen but him. I had a lot of fun with the Golf R. It's got the 2.0 liter turbo 4Motion, so that's kind of cool. This one was a manual. That was a thing. You didn't used to be able to get the Golf R with the manual. You know, that was sort of the trade-off. If you want more power to step out of the GTI, you could do that, but it was only the double clutch. Now you can get the manual, which I think is cool. The downside to all of this, and of course you get the all-wheel drive, which is a good thing, is this one cost almost $44,000, which is a lot of money for a Golf.
Yeah, it's a lot of money for a Golf. And I say that as like a former GTI owner. It's a lot of money for a Golf. Now, this thing's really good. I think it's the design. I mean, it's a few years old. We're at the tail end of the Mark 7 Golf's life stuff. And I think it still really holds up. The paint, like you said, if you buy the Golf R, which you can only do for the 2019 model, we found out earlier this week they're stopping production or stop selling it in the US for 2020, but we know it'll be back. I mean, this thing sells relatively well. You can get it in one of like 20 or 30 colors, including this magma orange. I think it looks pretty good. I had it last night. Photographed it. I've actually brought it back in because I had it a few weeks ago. I took it to my parents' place in St. Louis for a week. It really made me miss my GTI. It looks good. It's super comfortable. It's really quick. The stick shift is good. The price, man. I don't think it's worth the money over the GTI. You can get a GTI for like under 30, I think around 27 or 28 base price. And even a fully loaded like GTI, it may be down on power. And yes, you don't get all wheel drive, but it's like 34. I mean, it's like 10 grand less than this thing is. And I don't think the Golf R is 10 grand more car. Now, I like this thing a whole lot. I just don't think it's worth that extra money.
Agree with you 100%. 288 horsepower is very nice. That's a lot of horsepower in a Golf. I mean, it's a really fun little go-kart to run around town in. That being said, for like 27, 28, you get a pretty nice GTI. The engagement is there. To me, the reason you buy this car is the chassis dynamics and just how, you know, again, engaging the manual transmission is. The shift sort of action, the clutch feel. I mean, that to me, you just really feel, I'll use the cliche, one with the road. It's like the steering dynamics, it's all there. And you don't need an extra, you know, extra horsepower to like really enjoy it that much. It's sort of like, you know, if you have one shot of espresso, do you really need two? I mean, I don't know. It's a bad analogy, but I totally agree with you. I think just the GTI to me is as good as it needs to be. Now, am I glad they make this car in a world where we have a lot of different options? If this is what you want, sweet, go get it. That's fine. But I mean, if you're trying to make somewhat of a rational decision on this, I feel like the GTI is just the smarter play because you get like what would you say, 85%, maybe 90% of just like the fun, the factor, if you will, of a Golf R. I mean, just for me, I don't need that extra horsepower. And at that point, you're just spending more money.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the numbers on paper, the Golf R is, you know, second and a half quicker to 60. But if you're just driving around town, it doesn't feel any quicker. The only people like I can ever really recommend the Golf R to are people that like really need all wheel drive, be it like weather or if you're going to tune it. Having all-wheel drive is really nice to be able to put all that power down. But most of the time, the GTI feels just as quick, and it's just really hard to justify the price difference. You don't get the tartan seats in the Golf R, which, you know, something I love.
I do the same thing. I absolutely would get those seats. How are you with, like, the all-wheel drive, though? Is that a difference maker for you? Here's where I'm going to say I don't care about it. Because in a Michigan winter, you're already in a fairly small, low-to-the-ground car. You can slap winter tires on a GTI and I think get about the same, maybe even better experience than an all-wheel drive in all seasons or whatever this Golf R is on. So I think that's the solution. My other point here, though, is even if you did slap winter tires and had all-wheel drive, which is really aggressive, you're still in a small, low-to-the-ground car with not much ground clearance that you're going to get stuck in the snow most of the time anyway. Like, there's just some situations where a Golf, it's going to be kind of rough for you, so I wouldn't pay the premium for the all-wheel drive.
Yeah, I'd rather spend, you know, maybe $1,000 on a set of winter tires and a second set of wheels than spend another $10,000 on the Golf R because it's got all-wheel drive. Yeah, I mean, like, outside of the price, I love the Golf R, but that...
Oh, I do
it's
too.
It's just really hard for me to justify the price when the GTI is as good as it is.
Would you get one used?
Golf R?
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, used, it's a lot more compelling. You know, you don't
let somebody else take the hit.
Yeah. See where it comes down. It depends on what I wanted to do with it. I don't know. I still think it's hard to justify the price over the GTI, but you know, if you're going to track it, if you're going to tune it, you know, that little bit of extra grip is like worth considering. So
tracking or tuning it is very interesting. Side note, don't GTIs look amazing with like gnarly, like just like steel wheel covers out of the winters? I think those look so awesome. So
when I still had mine, the first winter I was here in Michigan, I only kept it for one winter, but, I had coilovers and
that's nice.
So I lifted it all the way up to get some extra ground clearance. And then I had steelies and, some Blizzaks on there. It looked really good because it was red, but had the black wheels and black trim on it. Yeah. I miss my GTI a lot.
Jeremy, GTI or Golf R?
You know, I'm won over by your argument. If I were making a suggestion, probably the standard GTI, especially with the tartan seats and, you know, save yourself a little bit of money. I'm not totally sure though that I would do that. The Golf R is pretty fun to drive. I think makes a pretty compelling case. Like Reese was just talking earlier about you know, well, the Outback's more powerful. The Golf R is more powerful than the GTI too. And I see that argument on both sides. The practical side of me would probably try to save a little bit of money and have just as much fun with the GTI. I'm not hating on the Golf R.
Fair enough. I think that's a reasonable take too, you know, so we can't all agree on everything.
Yeah. And like I said, the Golf R is still really good and still a ton of fun. And I think I'd probably buy a Golf R over like an Audi S3. I mean, you get the hatchback and probably more features and the S3 is basically a sedan version of that car. But
that's interesting. Wait, so you would get a Golf R over an A3?
Yeah.
I don't think I'd do that. I really like the A3, though. S3, though, you're saying?
Yeah, because they both got all-wheel drive. They both got the same, like, 280 horsepower. I mean,
it's the same chassis.
Yeah, it's just a sedan form factor. I'd probably get the Golf R just for the hatchback. But anything on that platform. Anything on that.
I mean, the real problem here is the price of the Golf R, right?
I mean,
like, we love the car. Thing. There's no problem with the car.
Yeah, we just think it's really expensive. So, yeah, I mean, you could get two GTIs. I mean, Yeah, save one, put winter tires on it and only drive it in the winter.
So all of that said, I've seen some really good deals on anything in the Golf lineup. So if you're looking and you get a good deal on a Golf R, go for it. I mean, it's I think we all agree, it's a really good, really fun car. Just as, you know, you pay a little more.
Cool. So why don't we move on to paying a little more? Side note, can you believe how much football we've talked and it's like August 7th?
No kidding.
Wait till like football season actually starts. Anyways, so for just south of $70,000, that will get you a BMW M340i xDrive 2020 flavor. We had this come through the fleet. I know, Jeremy, you spent some time in one recently as well on the track. Was it in Portugal? Is that where you did it?
Yeah, that's right. So BMW launched the lower level, like the 330i that everyone's actually going to buy. They launched that and gave us a little preview of the more powerful 340, but they didn't let us drive it on public streets. It was still wearing camouflage, all that kind of good stuff. But we did have fun with it on the track. I mean, it's 90% of the way to an M3, right? Like it's knocking on M3's door. If you go back a couple generations, M3s that everybody absolutely raved about, this is just as powerful, probably just as fast. So yeah, I think it's a great car.
And you had it on the track, which I think is really where you sort of get the value for having all of this, like, you know, M car light pieces. I think that's where you see the, you know, again, the value. I drove it basically around town. I know, Reese, you took it to lunch and had some fun with it. I mean, it's a really enjoyable car to drive. That 3-liter twin turbo inline six is really nice motor. Sounds pretty good. It looks okay. I think, again, this is where I'll try to keep this brief, a little bit of hand wringing over the looks of the 3 Series now, especially in like whatever M flavor they gussy it up with. Seems like there's a lot going on. A guy in our office has an older 3 Series, maybe 15 years old, maybe. And I couldn't help but just be taken by how simple and clean and elegant that car was. And then I'm looking at ours and I'm like, God, this thing looks like it's so far in the future compared to that. Very sophisticated, from the headlights to the trim to the wheels. And I'm also like, man, there's so much going on here. It's like a chocolate shake with, like, you know, a bunch of different flavors mixed into it. I kind of think less is more with, you know, some of these, you know, Bimmer design cues. Anyways, good to drive. I liked all the different ways you could tailor the driving experience. I was definitely fired up to drive it. I don't know how you guys felt, but I mean, anytime a 3 Series comes through, I'm fired up. I want to drive it. I want to, like, see if this fits with, like, my notion of what the 3 Series is sort of in my own head. And that actually usually leads me to more like cognitive dissonance, because there's no car I like to obsess over more than the 3 Series. Long story short, I enjoyed it. It was pretty good. I'm not sure if I would, I am sure I wouldn't say this is like the best thing you could buy in this segment. I think what Mercedes is doing, those cars are a little, I think, they tend to have a little more gravitas, if you will. Like, I think their design's better inside and out. The motors, I think, are about a wash. But, you know, this is near the top of the segment, but I wouldn't say it's like my absolute pick anymore. And I used to love all versions of the 3 Series. Let's put it that way. This one, very nice car, though. $69,570. Lots of different goodies on here. It had the executive package, the premium package, which just means it gets heated things, automatic high beams with Icon, adaptive LEDs with laser lights. I didn't even know those were here. That's interesting. So cool things there, some driver assisted stuff, and my personal favorite, the Oyster Vernasca leather for $1,400. So very expensive car. I think if you take a lot of those coloring and trim options, you get it down into the 50s, which is a little bit more reasonable. But what did you think, Reese?
So I only really took it to lunch, so blasting it up and down Woodward. So I really didn't get a chance to check out the chassis or the all-wheel drive system. But I mean, it kind of goes without saying, but that inline six is a peach. It's so good. BMW builds one hell of an engine. Sounds good. Super smooth. Next to no turbo lag. It's paired really well with that 8-speed automatic. Yeah, it's looks aside, you know, chassis and everything aside, you know, we've kind of knocked the last generation 3 series for being a little disconnected relative to other ones, but I never had a complaint about the engine. It's still really good. This new, I've got this one for the weekend. I'm excited to spend some more time in it. But you were talking about the competitors. So we had a C63 in last week. The C43 is kind of, it's the twin turbo V6. It's kind of the direct competitor to this M340. C43, I'm looking at Mercedes-Benz, starts at 56. Now, you could probably load one up with 15,000 of options for 70. Equal money, which one would you get?
I'd go with the Benz. And that's tough for me to say because I really like the 3 Series. But just right now, I think the C-Class is just killing it. Everything top to bottom is engaging. It's, you know, stylish. It stands out. I think I would say Mercedes got a little more aggressive with its design, and I think they pulled it off. I think BMW got a little more aggressive with its design, and they didn't quite pull it off. I feel like their cars look a little overwrought to me. So there's that. And I think when you put it into the various M dressings, or whether it's a full M car or just, you know, one of these like slightly diet M versions, either way, I think it's still a little bit overdone. This is a very good car. If you're a hardcore BMW person, you're going to like this more than the Mercedes. Of course you are, or the Audi. But yeah, I'd have to go with the Mercedes. It's a great question.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I do like, initial impressions were good, and maybe after this weekend I'll have changed my mind, but the C-Class is really good. I mean, the base C-Class is good, and like the AMG versions just kind of build on it. But yeah, I will say I don't like the V6 and the Mercedes as much as the powertrain and the BMW, but I think the rest of the car kind of makes up for it. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to go wrong with either of them.
At the end of the day, I mean, I do like the inline configuration. I mean, how often you, yes, if you're a true car guy, gearhead, you'll notice some of those differences. But at the end of the day, how often are you thinking, am I driving a V6 or an inline six? You know, so there's somewhat of that. But
see, what I'm hoping for is the new Mercedes inline six from the AMG 53 models will come over to the C-Class at some point.
Yeah, that would be cool. That would be cool. Jeremy, any final thoughts on this? I know you tracked it, which frankly, you probably had the coolest experience of any of us driving these things, but any final thoughts on this car?
I mean, it's always a fun day when you get to spend time on a track, especially in a powerful car. And we had some lead follow laps, which isn't quite as ideal, but at least we had a Formula One, ex-Formula One driver leading. Yeah, I have to agree with everything you guys have said. It was fun to drive it on the track. I actually have also driven the C-Class in various different AMG trim levels, including the 43. Yeah, I err on the side of the Benz as well. I think the design is better. I just prefer, especially inside, the interior of Mercedes-Benz's recent models are heads and tails better than BMW in my opinion. And I mean, dynamically, I don't think there's that much probably in between them. I think both of them feel a little bit synthetic from behind the wheel. You know, those days of like perfect crisp steering that superlative, et cetera, et cetera. That doesn't really exist these days. I think we have to stop complaining about it a little bit just because it is what it is. I fall on the side of the Mercedes as well.
Alrighty. Sounds good. Let's move on to the Power Wagon. Reese, you spent some time in this one. This is the newer one. I'm a big fan of Power Wagons. Every time I get in one, I feel like it's a special experience. It just has so much presence. It's one of the vehicles that I think, even though it is so large, it's still controllable and reasonable and you can handle it. And I like all of those things about it. But you spent the most time in this one. So why don't you take us through what you did with it and what you think?
I love the Power Wagon. So a lot of people try to compare this to the F-150 like Raptor, and I think it's a bit of an insincere thing. They are both these like done up like off-road vehicles, but they kind of are going after different things. F-150's, you know, kind of a dune runner. It's faster. It's got a big, powerful engine. Not that the Power Wagon doesn't, but the Power Wagon is not made to go like super fast. It's got the Hemi, which is like great and it sounds awesome. But it's got live axles. It sits big. It's got the winch out front. It's made for like, you know, trail crawling and like going up and just conquering like damn near anything you want. This thing's so cool. And the one we had was, let's see, what it was red. Flame red clear coat.
So did it have like the graphics on the side?
Oh yeah. So it had the vertical graphics along the you know, on the side of the bed just behind the cab.
As one does.
Had the RAM boxes. I like stuck my
best thing ever. Love the RAM boxes.
Love the RAM boxes.
Yeah, it's awesome. I know they are on the 1500, but they've got little drain holes. You can fill them with ice. And like, if you're tailgating, put like beer, soft drinks or whatever you're putting in there. Pop. Sorry.
There you
go.
It's
Michigan.
Right. Right. Well, it's Coke in the South.
Everything is Coke in the South,
but everything is Coke in the South. Nobody drinks Pepsi, right?
No. So yeah, this thing has got some presence. I don't think I've driven. The last thing I think I drove that like felt this like cool running around was probably the Jeep Gladiator that we had in the spring. And this is just kind of a Gladiator taken to like another extreme. They're both like long. They're both like not necessarily the fastest vehicles in the world, but they kind of have a similar purpose. Like live axles, they're about just conquering trails and going. And yeah, this thing is so damn cool. And I know I keep using that word, but it's like few vehicles on the road just make me feel as happy immediately as like the Power Wagon. I mean, I threw my dog in the back. Like we just went around, cruised, had the windows down. It was, yeah, just a really like lovely time in this car. Yeah, it's Power Wagon is so, so great.
You know what I like to drive a Power Wagon? What I don't have to, like, you know, haul something. It's like a Wednesday night. Like a day that's just kind of like a random, normal day of the week. Get in a Power Wagon and suddenly it becomes an experience. So I think that's a cool thing. Then you feel, like, excited to get up Thursday morning and driving into work. I think these are the random things I think about. But, yeah. So, Jeremy, when do you like to drive the Power Wagon and what do you think of it?
I like to drive the Power Wagon not in Seattle, Washington.
Fair enough.
Because I lived in Seattle for 4 years prior to Columbus, Ohio. You know, I've driven some big heavy duty pickup trucks, Power Wagon being among them. In the confines of a city, it's pretty terrible. The obviously the gas mileage is terrible, but you expect that. I'm not going to ding a heavy duty off-road pickup truck for its gas mileage. But just getting around in the thing, finding parking spots, fitting in narrow lanes, that's just a disaster. But it makes a lot more sense in, you know, in Detroit or in Columbus, Ohio. Again, outside the city, the suburbs, when you don't have those size restrictions and constraints. So that out of the way, I love the Power Wagon. Everybody talks about the Raptor, and I do love the Raptor, but man, the Power Wagon is kind of like, you can't describe the Raptor as like a scale boat or something like that, you know, but compared to the Power Wagon, which is like a sledgehammer, you know, like that comparison kind of works, and the wielding the sledgehammer is kind of fun. So yeah, big fan of the Power Wagon. I do have to admit I haven't driven one with the new interior in it yet. The old Ram interior was just okay. I bet you that the new one, that Reese has driven, like that really puts it over the edge. I actually really love the vertical oriented big touchscreen in the center. I know that's kind of, controversial. Some people don't like that vertical orientation, but I think it's cool. I'm a big fan of the Power Wagon.
Yeah, this one had the new, it's pretty much the same interior as the 2018, 2019 Ram 1500, which personally I think is best in class. I think pretty much everybody agrees with that. The new interior is good. The big touchscreen's good. The Power Wagon has got a bench seat up front, which you don't really see anymore.
Sweet. Didn't know that. That's an amazing factoid.
I can't really think of anything. I mean,
now I'm just sad.
Leather covered bench seat. I mean, this was not plastic. It was cool.
We need to get another one in here because I missed this one. So you're telling me there's a leather bench seat in existence right now? That's great.
I don't know. This thing's so cool. My wife loves riding around in it. It's like Jeremy said, he used to live in Seattle. I used to live in Los Angeles. If I was back there, this would not be a fun thing to drive around. But cruising around Detroit where the roads are wide and the straight and flat, it's fine. It's so much fun.
Cool. So should we spend some money?
Let's spend some money.
So this is a good one. So this is on another vehicle that I like a lot. So this is, let me scroll down here. We have a gentleman who had written us earlier. This is Dave from Houston and wanted to know how he's going to replace his 4Runner. And things have changed a little bit. So now he's going to keep the 4Runner as his daily driver for the foreseeable future, which I think is awesome. Great move. Like that a lot. Thanks for the recommendations, though. So, hey, happy to help. But now what he wants to do is get a second car to scratch his itch for a fun, sporty, and engaging vehicle. Here are the requirements. Buckle up, guys. 4 seats so he could put the kids, both kids in the car, trying to get them excited about sports cars when they grow up. I put my kid in the frunk of a McLaren. So, yeah, totally support that notion. It wasn't moving, just for clarity here. He wants a manual transmission, preferably rear-wheel drive, but open to the all-wheel drive amenities out there. Reliable and inexpensive to maintain. Okay. Gets a little trickier. Targeted budget in the range of $20,000. Looks like a little bit less than $20,000, actually. Willing to stretch, though, for the right vehicle. Used are good. Easy to find on the used market. Okay. Here's some of the things. FRS BRZ 86s, Mustang GTs. He's kind of torn between the pros and cons. Thus, he's writing to us. Open to other ideas. A couple of ways he kind of breaks this down. Likes the purity of the Toyota Motor Co. sports cars. Also can't really get him into trouble is what he's saying. Okay, I'd buy that. Likes the idea of the growly V8 for the Stang. For the money, I'd agree with that. Hoping we can help him out. Loves the podcast. Hey, thanks for writing in. We love this question. So, Reese, I know you've had some thoughts on this. Let's start with you.
Yeah, so I got a whole list here. First, I'll address the BRZ Mustang comparison. I would go with the Mustang. If you don't need it as your daily driver and you're not having to worry about fuel in the Mustang, it's bigger. It's going to have a bit more room in the back.
Well, it has 4 seats, too.
Well, so does the BRZ.
Oh, you're right. Good point.
Tiny, tiny, tiny back seats, but they're there. It sounds better. It's going to be way faster. On a road, it's not going to feel quite as sharp or nimble. I really like the steering on the BRZ 86 FRS, that chassis. But out of those two, I'd go with the Mustang. But I made a pretty decent list of some other cars.
Nice.
First off, BMW M3, you can get a E46 for, under $20,000, and that's a really good car with a really good chassis, really good steering, really good engine, and back seats. And like I said, if it's not your daily driver, you don't have to worry about maintenance. You don't have to worry as much about maintenance and stuff with that. So, M3s, they're out there. That was the only really rear drive car I could think of. But some all wheel drive one, Mitsubishi Evo or Subaru WRX STI. Those are going to be stupid fast. They're going to have 4 actual doors. And So they're easy to get people in and out of the back seat, but still a ton of fun. And one oddball choice, if you were willing to like hunt for one, you can get an old Skyline GTR. They're in America. They're all wheel drive. They've got a back seat, steering wheel's on the wrong side, but you know, that's a lot of car, and it, like, it's a special and rare car. You know, you pull up to a Cars and Coffee, like, it's going to get some attention. It, you know, it might get your kids excited about it because like nobody else is going to have a car like your dad. And, so yeah, those are my suggestions. I go with, out of all those, I might go with the GTR. If it's not your first car and you don't have to worry about like work driving it every day, get something a little cool, get something a little rare. Yeah.
That is an excellent Joel Stocksdale-esque version of different options. So that's very cool. I like all of those. The Evo is one I didn't even think of, and that car really holds a special place in my heart. I don't know, man, though. That's rough to drive. That is, to me, like the definition of second car. It will beat you up.
Yeah, I was. I just went on eBay and was kind of like searching through filters, and there's a handful of them on there. Same with the WRXs and SCIs. The Evo is not a comfortable car, but it's a ton of fun, and it's not going to be too expensive to maintain. So
the personality levels that you bring up with like this sort of subsection of options, I think that really is where you get into some interesting things. Because the BRZ, you know, those, its siblings, if you will, and the Mustang GT are brilliant cars, but show up in an M3. You know, E46.
Yeah, everybody's got a Mustang. Yeah. Everybody's got a BRZ. Like, I don't know. If you really want to get your kids excited, get something that's a little obscure. Get something that's a little more rare. Like, because it's always going to get attention.
Jeremy, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I've thought a little bit about this. Reese covered a lot of bases there, and I like where he's coming from with those. I have a few choices to add to that. I think the thing that he did mention in there is availability, like ease of finding them. And, you know, something like a GTR, yeah, they're out there, you can find it, but you're going to do some looking. If something goes wrong, you're going to have to do some even harder looking for parts. So that's a concern. Not dogging the choice. I think it's a great choice. Some other options. BMW 135iS. You can't quite get into the 1 Series M at this budget, but you can get into a 135iS with a 6-speed. And you have a choice of either the coupe or convertible. And this is like M car light. We were kind of talking about the M340i in comparison to the M3 earlier. The 135iS was a great car. It was the turbo inline six, which it had more power than the standard 135. Let me look it up real quick. 20 extra horsepower, 17 more pound-feet of torque. So it's 320 total horsepower, 317 pound-feet. That engine's underrated for what it's worth, and hooked up to a 6-speed manual rear-wheel drive. That's a really good car. That was one of the one of those cars that we talk about as having great BMW steering still. So, yeah, take a look at that. Other options that I jotted down: Cadillac CTS-V, one of the first generation ones with the 400 horsepower small block, 6-speed manual, rear wheel drive. A really fun car, and he mentioned that he likes the idea of the burbling V8 underhood, check mark with that. You can, if you're looking at Mustangs, why not look at Challengers too? You can get an SRT or even a 392, with a 6-speed in your price range, a little bit higher mileage, probably around 2011, year is where you'd fall into that. But that's a lot of fun. That's a big, powerful V8 engine, especially if you get the 392. I did a quick little search using Autoblog's classified ads finder, and I did see some nationwide available, a 2011 392 with a 6-speed. So that's a good choice. A little bit oddball, but a car that I have a lot of fun with, and it's not what I'd recommend, but I'm just throwing it in here and mentioning it. You can get a Fiat 500 Abarth with the kind of fun little rollback canvas roof. That car spits and pops, and the manual transmission, and I mean, it's very different from anything else that we talked about. He mentioned rear wheel or all wheel drive. This is front wheel drive. But just throwing it out there because I have a lot of fun in that car. And it popped into my head when I was doing these searches. But my top choice, I would go Mustang before I went the 86. I agree with Reese there between the two that he recommended. My top choice behind, besides the Mustang, would be that BMW 135 IS.
So it's funny you mentioned the 135. I didn't really even think about it. A good friend of mine, we go back 20 years, is a BMW mechanic and had a 135 IS that he tuned. That thing was a lot of fun. And for a while, I was looking at buying a used one too. Like Jeremy said, the steering's really good. The engine's underrated. If you want to throw some tunes on there, you can get a lot of power for not a lot of money. Even if you don't, a stock one is still a really, really good car. Short wheelbase, so it's pretty nimble. That's a good call, Jeremy. I can't believe I missed that one.
I think the what I love here is we took like the sort of suggestions, and then we've totally muddied the waters. They added like half a dozen more. So I'll just chime in and say I really like the M3, the E46. I just think that is, to me, that's just like what I would get given this amount of money. There, I wouldn't say they're super easy to find, but there's two of them here. I'd bring a trailer that look pretty good. 2004 coupe six-speed, and one with 13,000 miles. Now that was about $25,000. So again, well, hey, he said he could stretch his budget, so why not? That to me is when if I were looking at cars like this, I think I would go with that because I would enjoy the, like to me, I talked about what the M340i meant and how I couldn't totally reconcile all that. Well, I don't have to with this. This is exactly what I want and how I like sort of like believe in the M3 and the 3 series. So that's what I do. Lots of other good options here. BRZ is always intriguing. I really like that one. Mustang GT, sure, you can't go wrong with that. Keep the 4Runner, though. Good move. So that's my choice would be the E46 M3. I dig it. And Reese, what did you actually settle on? Did you actually settle on one?
If you're picking E46 and Jeremy's going with 1 Series, I'm going to go with the oddball choice and just try to find a GTR.
Yeah, that's cool.
I think they're cool.
Yeah. Hey, write us back, Dave. Let us know what you do end up going with.
Yeah, this is a good group. I'm genuinely curious, especially what the 4Runner's good. I'm curious what you do end up with.
Cool. Hey, thanks for writing. And to the rest of you, thanks for listening. It's been a great episode. I've really enjoyed hanging out with you guys, talk a little football. Season's upon us, but we have a lot of great cars too. Summer's still here. We have Woodward. We have Pebble coming up. So lots of good stuff on Autoblog, lots of good podcasts coming up. Get out there and drive something, though, and listen to the Autoblog podcast. Said this year's been my monies, but overall, be safe out there. We'll see you next week.
Hey everybody, this is podcast producer Eric Meyer here. I just wanted to chime in at the end of the episode and let everybody know that Autoblog has merchandise now. We've got t-shirts, coffee mugs, hoodies, throw pillows, you name it. You can find it all at redbubble.com/people/autoblog, or you can just search Autoblog on redbubble.com. As always, thanks for listening to the show, and we'll see you next week.